This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Here's what the Boston Globe's Dan Shaughnessy wrote today about Johnny Pesky, who died yesterday. The Red Sox are 112 years old. Fenway is 100. Johnny Pesky only lived to be 92, but his life touched everything that ever had anything to do with the Red Sox.
Shaughnessy's right. He points out that Pesky was born on the day Babe Ruth played his final day with the Red Sox. Pesky himself played with Ted Williams, Bobby Doerr, and Dom DiMaggio. He managed Carl Yastrzemski and coached Jim Rice and Nomar Garcia-Para. He celebrated the historic comeback when the Sox won the 2004 World Series, and he was on the field this past spring, still in uniform, celebrating the 100th anniversary of Fenway Park.
He was a player, manager, coach, and goodwill ambassador, but to anyone who had the good fortune to meet him, and I was one of the many, he was a good guy and a gentleman. In an era of aloof, multimillionaire baseball mercenaries, Pesky was a generous hometown friend who loved to talk about baseball, the Red Sox, and the great players he played with. Here he is in a 2003 interview with former Red Sox great Bobby Doerr, who you'll hear first talking about baseball.
How we loved it. We loved it.
Oh, yeah. Dominic and Bobby and me and Teddy. You know, we were known as the Big Four from the West Coast. We were the rabble-rousers, but we had a great love for the game of baseball and for each other.
So Johnny Pesky died yesterday at the age of 92. To many of us, he was the last connection with so much great baseball history. So we're going to spend a little time now talking about Johnny Pesky and all that history, about what he meant to the Red Sox, to baseball, and what he meant to you. Did you ever get a chance to talk to Johnny Pesky? He was a great storyteller. If you ever heard any of his stories, give us a call. How do you remember him? You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us in the studio is Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. Great to have you in today, Bill.
Well, it's good to be here, Anthony.
Also joining us from the western part of the state is Glenn Stout. He's the author of Red Sox Century and most recently Fenway 1921, The Birth of a Ballpark, Championship Season and Fenway's Remarkable First Year. Great to have you back on Radio Boston, Glenn.
Thanks very much, Anthony, and hi, Bill.
Hey, Glenn.
Bill, let me start with you. You and I were talking a little earlier today about Johnny Pesky, and I think I said something like he represents a link to such a fascinating time in baseball history, and you correctly pointed out that he's linked to just about the entire history of baseball.
Well, I think the wonderful thing about Johnny Pesky was that what he brought to the table was timeless. He was marvelously supportive of the players when he was a coach and when he was a manager. And that's a quality that we respect now and that players respected 50 years ago just as much. He had a sense of self, of where he belonged in Red Sox history. He never overvalued it. He spoke of himself in a very self-deprecating way often. He was very funny. He was a terrific storyteller, and he recognized the value and the importance of stories in this game, which has better and more history than most.
That's true, and I want to talk about some of those stories. Glenn Stout, let me just start off by getting you to give me your impressions and how you will remember Johnny Pesky.
Well, I think, like many other people, you remember Johnny Pesky as probably the most pleasant and most human being ever connected to the Red Sox organization. He was nice to everyone. It didn't matter if you were someone, a reporter covering his very first game, Johnny would talk to you and give you the same attention that he would have Peter Gammons or someone like that. And I mean, I think the first time I really talked to Johnny at length was when I was writing about the infamous incident where Pesky held the ball in the 1946 World Series. And this should be an uncomfortable moment for someone because Johnny Pesky got blamed for costing the Red Sox a ball game, unfairly, I think. I don't think it was his fault at all. And Johnny talked about it as if it was no trouble at all to talk about it. It didn't trouble him at all. He was kind. He answered every question. And even when I alluded to the fact that, you know, I've looked at those films, and I don't think you deserve any of the grief you've gotten, that was fine with him. He didn't really care. and you know, that shows not just the humanity of the guy, but the grace.
Now, Glenn Stout,
think of Johnny Pesky.
It's a great story, and since you brought it up, I just want to go into a tiny bit of detail into that 1946 World Series for listeners who might not know the whole story. So the Red Sox have had their share of tough moments. This is certainly one of them. So this is Game 7 of the 1946 World Series. The score is tied against the St. Louis Cardinals.
Right.
Eno Slaughter is on first. Bottom of the eighth, two outs. What happens?
The ball's hit to center field to Les Culberson, who's playing center field because Dom DiMaggio pulled a muscle the previous inning. And the ball's hit to Culberson. He makes a decent play on it, not a great play, but Eno Slaughter is running from the pitch from first base, and he scores. The throw from Culberson comes into Johnny Pesky, who's at the edge of the infield dirt, and, you know, Pesky kind of turns, throws the ball to the plate. Slaughter slides in safe, and it became known as Pesky held the ball. But really, if you look at the play, which I did hundreds of times with the grainy footage that exists, you know, Culberson was a little slow making his throw. He didn't receive the ball, you know, shoulder height. It was a little lower. And the throw to Pesky wasn't the best. It was kind of looping. And Pesky just caught the ball, turned and threw.
And yet forever he's been known as he held the ball, he held the ball, he held the ball.
Yeah, he made a fine play, but Eno Slaughter made a great play scoring on the ball. Johnny couldn't do anything about it. If he would have had a howitzer, Eno Slaughter was still going to score and the Red Sox were still going to lose that World Series.
All right, well, I'm glad we dispensed with that because, of course, the way most people want to remember or choose to remember Johnny Pesky is this delightful guy. And Bill, you and I share a little bit of baseball history. A long, long time ago, I was a producer for NPR, and we headed down to spring training. It was my first time down there. I think I was sort of starstruck and looking forward to meeting great people. The greats like Ted Williams was down there. Kurt Gibson was down there. Sparky Anderson was down there. This was, what year was it, Bill?
84 or 5.
The Tigers had just won
the
World Series.
Yeah.
It seems like everywhere I went, I was being told to shut up, get out of the way, line up. I was being treated horribly by all of these great stars. But there was Johnny Pesky, smile on his face, happy to talk to me, gave me a terrific interview, and I had that experience with him again and again and again,
yeah.
Glenn, which corresponds to what you said. Just doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how inexperienced you are, he was always pleasant, affable, and full of good cheer and great stories. And speaking And speaking of stories, Bill, you've heard some great stories from Johnny Pesky.
Well, he would talk about whatever you wanted to talk about. We did a program very early in the history of Only a Game, which was all about Ted Williams, and we went down and talked to Johnny Pesky, and Gary Wallach, who's now our senior producer, was standing in the dugout with me, and Pesky looked at Gary, and he said, "You know, Gary, one day Ted Williams was standing right where you're standing now," and Gary began to tremble, and he said he was talking to Bobby Doerr, you know, and he said he was trying to give Bobby Doerr some hitting tips, and finally Bobby Doerr turned to him, he said, "Ted, I just can't hit like you can." And Williams turned back to Doerr and he said, "All right, if you want to be a lousy 280 hitter, be a lousy 280 hitter." And I think Gary didn't even hear the end of the story because he was so excited that Pesky had pointed out that he was standing precisely where Ted Williams has stood in the Red Sox dugout.
That's great. Glenn Stout, Pesky as a player, he joined the Red Sox back in the 40s. He played for 10 seasons. What kind of a player was he?
Well, if he was playing right now, he'd be worth about $75 million. That's how good of a player Johnny Pesky was. I mean, he joined the Red Sox, played 1 year, and then lost 3 years to the service. And I think in Johnny's first 6 or 7 years in the big leagues, he scored 100 runs each year. In his first 3 seasons, and this is interrupted with 3 years in the war, he collected over 200 base hits. I mean, he had a spectacular run at the beginning of his career, only broken up by the war years. It's not unthinkable to think that if Johnny wouldn't have lost 3 years to World War II, we'd be talking about Johnny Pesky as an official Hall of Famer rather than the unofficial Hall of Famer, which I think he is as an ambassador of the game and an all-around good guy. But Johnny Pesky was a very, very good player, certainly one of the top 25 or 30 players, I think, in Red Sox history.
I love the stats, Glenn. It's great to talk about the fact that he led the American League in hits three times and several times had over 200 hits in the season. But my favorite Pesky stat is he had a career total of 17 home runs, and he got the foul pole named after him anyway, as if he'd wrapped 300 home runs around that foul pole.
Yeah, but he had a total of 17.
Right,
17.
He was not a power hitter.
He wasn't a power hitter. He was a spray hitter. I want to play a clip of tape from a wonderful interview that Robin Young, our own Robin Young, did back in 2003. She talked with Johnny Pesky and Bobby Doerr and author David Halberstam, who wrote a book about the Big Four: Ted Williams, Bobby Doerr, Dom DiMaggio, and Johnny Pesky, who all played together. This clip starts with Halberstam talking about what these players meant to each other and what baseball meant to them. So let's listen.
Four guys growing up all on the West Coast, coming to one team, a baseball mad town, in roughly the same time, having this friendship, the love. That won't happen again. Big money, free agency, planes instead of trains. You'll never have that kind of affection and human texture again. And they were appreciative of the good things and the good things that endured in their lives in the way that many Americans now take good things that happened to them for granted.
You left one thing out: how we loved it. We loved it.
Oh, yeah. Dominic and Bobby and me and Teddy. You know, we were known as the Big Four from the West Coast. We were the rabble rousers, but we had a great love for the game of baseball and for each other.
So that last voice was Johnny Pesky. Before that, it was Bobby Doerr. He made reference to Dom DiMaggio and, of course, the great Ted Williams, who he played with. Glenn Stout, he represents such a link with the past. Is there anyone like him still around in baseball now that he's gone? And, of course, all those great names that he was mentioning right there.
Boy, there aren't very many. You know, the person I always compared it to a little bit was Phil Rizzuto of the Yankees, who, you know, was also a shortstop, but also kind of evolved into this larger ambassador of the game type of figure. And, you know, the funny thing with Johnny, because he grew up, you know, in Portland, Oregon, is that he actually went to a camp when he was a kid that was run by Carl Mays. Now, Carl Mays was the pitcher best known for throwing the pitch that killed a player from Cleveland, but he was also a star of the Red Sox in the 1917 and 1918 seasons. So Johnny's history with the Red Sox actually went back to when he was a little kid playing sandlot ball back where he grew up. He really did embody, you know, the entire history of the game in a way that very, very few other people have.
Let's take a couple of calls. Listeners, we're talking about Johnny Pesky, who passed away yesterday at the age of 92. He was a great storyteller. If you have any to share with us, give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We've got Bill Littlefield and Glenn Stout here in the studio, and we're happy to have you join the conversation. Let's go to Ellen, who's calling from Concord. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good. I'm calling because I wanted to share a very personal story about Mr. Pesky.
Good.
And it did involve a trip to Fort Myers, the spring training. And for many, many years, my husband and I always took our only son to Fort Myers for the spring training. And on one particular season, I believe my son might have been around 10, maybe close to 12, we actually got to talk to Johnny Pesky. He allowed us to pose with him for a photograph. He signed it. We came back again with a developed photo. It's been sitting in a frame in my son's bedroom for the last 20 years. And I remember Johnny Pesky being such a friendly, personable man. He was even asking us about our lives.
That's so nice, Ellen.
I told him.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
No, go ahead, Ellen. Finish up the story. Your cell phone is just about to we're just about to lose your signal, but that's okay.
I just wanted to say that he just even wrote out an autograph for my elderly dad at the time, who was about 90 years old, and it just showed how much Mr. Pesky cared about everybody, and we'll finally remember him.
It's a great story, Ellen. And Bill, it's typical. We were talking about a great picture of Johnny Pesky and former manager John McNamara.
Absolutely. That I took during that spring training with the two of them sitting on folding chairs looking out at the ball field, and Pesky basically educating McNamara about the team that he had signed on to manage. It was a pretty interesting situation. The spring training business was repeated over and over again. Johnny was famous not only for being accessible and friendly at spring training, he was also a shameless flirt. He would be alongside the field, and the fans would come down, and he would tell all the ladies how nice they looked and how much he liked their dresses and all the rest of it, and they'd all go away swooning about Johnny Pesky.
Glenn, you have a Johnny Pesky story, I understand. I think you made a very brief mention of it yesterday on All Things Considered, and that is you attended a fantasy baseball camp in which he was a coach. Do I have that right?
Right, I got to attend Red Sox fantasy camp back in 1998, and Johnny was there. And I'd spoken to Johnny on the phone, but I don't think we'd ever met in person or anything. And I wasn't there as a reporter anyway. I was there, you know, participating. But, you know, I was the only person at that camp that had, like, hair halfway down his back and kind of looked like a homeless person. But, you know,
Pesky loved that.
I'll never forget going up to Johnny. And Johnny's one of the few people that I've ever asked for an autograph from. And I got him to autograph a baseball. We chatted a little bit because I could always talk to him about the 1968 Columbus Jets, a minor league team that he was a manager of that was one of my boyhood, you know, that was the team I followed when I was a kid. They were the Pirates farm chain. So I talked to him about that for a little bit, and we chatted, and he signed my ball, and very pleasant. And, you know, and he treated me just like everyone else. And then I walked away, and I did kind of, like, look over my shoulder, and I saw him do a double take to somebody sitting around him, like, who the heck was that? But, you know, Johnny was such a gentleman, it didn't matter to him who you were. It didn't matter what you looked like. He treated you like a human being. And, boy, people like that are the people that I remember.
Let's listen to a little more of Johnny Pesky. So here's Pesky talking on the Everett Community Television show Older But Wiser back in 2008. He's talking about the Red Sox finally breaking the curse and winning the World Series in 2004. Let's give it a listen.
I waited 60 years to see that. There was so much happiness. You'd be surprised. Yeah. I never saw so many grown men cry, because it meant so much. There were a lot of us there for the first time on a championship team. We played in series, but we never got the golden fleece, as they say.
Yeah,
but and I run into Ronnie Jackson, and he was crying. So he was actually sobbing. He was so happy.
Yeah.
And then he was crying. I started to cry, and guy over here started. Oh, we looked like children. You know, just
it was
just,
such a wonderful.
It was
such,
you know,
a wonderful time.
What a celebration!
Oh yeah.
So, Glenn, what do you make of it? I mean, what strikes me about that is here's a guy who had a long and distinguished career on his own. Of course, never did win the World Series, but he seems so genuinely and generously happy that they finally got there, even if it was without him.
Yeah, I mean, but that was Johnny. I mean, he wasn't, talking so much about what he didn't get to experience.
Right.
But what other people got to experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I've, you know, heard people talking about Johnny and read things written about Johnny over this, you know, the past 24 hours, you know, since we've learned he passed, the thing that struck me is that, like, there's no mourning here. This is a celebration of Johnny Pesky. And that's the kind of guy that Johnny was. He wasn't somebody that cried over spilled milk or that bemoaned what he did in the 1946 World Series or talked about how the Red Sox were a team steeped in futility. He was about, you know, what was happening and what the positive things were.
Let's take another call. Sophia is calling from Arlington. Hi, Sophia. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, I was just going to share a story that I've heard from my mom for many years. She went to Radcliffe in the 40s, and she was a big Yankees fan. And one, I guess it must have been a night game, went with a young man to a Red Sox game. And he knew Johnny Pesky. So Johnny Pesky gave them a ride home back to Harvard. And my mom says at some point, you know, they're driving down the dark street, and the guy she's with says, you know, Johnny, you realize there's a Yankees fan in the car? And Johnny pulls the car over, and he's like, get out! And then it took my mom a second to realize that, of course, he was joking. And they went on, but... she loved that, to tell that story again and again.
Sophia, thanks for sharing that with us. I'd love to have seen the look on your mother's face in that moment. One more call. We still have got a little time. Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Framingham. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well.
Excellent. About 4 years ago, I took a trip with my twin brother down to to Florida. We visited spring training, and it was first time. Both of us are turning 6. It's like, hey, we're gonna check this out. So everybody's running around chasing the other ball players around. And I went over to one of the guys working. I said, where does Johnny hang out? Johnny Pesky. He said, right over here. So here comes Johnny, strolling along with his baseball bat. And he comes over where he sits on his chair, and I went over, I had him all to myself, because my brother was off buying balls. But anyway, so I showed Johnny a picture that I had my iPhone of my father, who used to run the scoreboard at Fenway Park. It was my dad with Ted Williams. And I showed it to Johnny. He looked at it, and he looked at it. He says, you know, I'm pretty sure I remember him. You know, it was just a special moment for me. And Johnny... just like people talking about, Johnny, we really cared about you. I'm just a regular guy. I'm just a Red Sox fan. He's like, hey, you know, just a great human being.
That's a nice story. There's a lot in there, Tim, that I like, including the anecdote about your dad running the scoreboard there and being photographed with Ted Williams. There's a lot of nice stuff wrapped up in that story. Thanks for the call. So, Bill, final thought. I mean, what does... a Johnny Pesky bring to the Red Sox, which will be missed most?
I think the callers have made it quite clear. They all have a personal story about Johnny Pesky. How many members of the current Red Sox or of any other Major League Baseball team can that be said of? How many people are walking around saying, I met so-and-so, and I know he makes $17 million a year, but by golly, he's just a regular guy. No, he isn't. Insulation. There's insulation now between them and the people who pay to watch them play. And Johnny was absolutely oblivious to that whole concept of distance between fan and member of the organization.
Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, Anthony.
And Glenn Stout, author of Red Sox Century, and most recently, Fenway 1921, The Birth of a Ballpark, a Championship Season, and Fenway's Remarkable First Year. Glenn, great pleasure to have you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, this conversation continues. If you want to post your memories about Johnny Pesky, you can do so right at radioboston.org. Many thanks for all of your calls today. We're very grateful.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Sure, Pesky held the ball. He's held the ball high for 70 years. In pro ball, living in sunshine's his mental weather. Johnny says today's a good day, tomorrow's better.